Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
Exactly. Before we start, let's get rid of this guy. This is going to be in the way. Put it on the altar. Oh, holy Lord, accept this computer as a gift to you. All right. This is a gift that I got from my friend Alex over here. And it says, heaven's a little closer when you're in Carleton, which is where I'm from. All right? I want those who are watching online to see it. All right? You've been blessed. All right? Nothing says Happy Mother's Day like Carleton. So I think that might be a premonition just to drive through Carleton, roll down the windows, take in the air. That's the air of success, right? It has breeded this. You're welcome. All right. Words really matter to me a lot. And so I came up with a message and the title. And as soon as it came to me, I started laughing, which is always a good sign that it's either really good for like four of us, and like everyone else will be like, why do you have a job? That's essentially what it's going to be. And today's message is following our, where's the computer? Oh, I put it on the altar. Sorry, Lord. All right. I'm a professional. Here we go. All right. So we're in a series called What's the Deal With? And the whole series is based off this idea of there's things that just go unnamed in our lives that we carry with us. Family systems, family trauma, family joy. And we don't always know why do we lean this way. Why do we find some things disgusting and other things totally inviting, and other people have exact opposite experiences? Why do we do church the way we do? Why do we close our eyes when we pray? Why do we think about God being a rock at one point and then like being like this like mother hen or this bird putting us under her wing at other points? And we don't always know why we think what we think, which is really important. That's the whole idea of the series of what's the deal with God, essentially. And today, we are talking about what's the deal with everyone's mind being transformed and blown by all my Facebook comments, right? All this transformation happening through Facebook, all right? It is a very common experience. And to get to that story, we obviously have to tell a story. Now, it is Mother's Day, and I have to tell a story about my mom, who I was guessing was going to be here, so she gets to hear a story. Now, let me start by saying this. Mother, I love you. I am blessed to be your son. The story is going to be funny, all right? And as a parent myself, my kids remember, like, three stories about me being their dad, and all of them have to do with me making a mistake, right? One of them being I burnt soup, and I did. One time I burnt soup, and no, I've made hundreds and hundreds of meals for them, and what do they remember? Burnt soup. So I know, Mom, that you've done so much more for me and my brother, but this is what we remember. So me and my brother were 3 years apart, and we were fighting downstairs probably over like G.I. Joes, and I wanted to be Snake Eyes, and he wanted to be Snake Eyes. No one wanted to be Storm Shadow, if anyone knows G.I. Joe. And it goes Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow. It goes in that order. And so we're downstairs, and we're like, I'm probably like 10, so he'd be 7. We're fighting each other. And my mom comes downstairs. Now, my mom introduced us to this charismatic experience of God, right? And part of charismatic experience is like high tradition of the Bible, and you take it very seriously. And what was handed to her, right, was to teach your kids biblical values, which is really important. And I'm very thankful for that. And my mom, when we were fighting, she'd come downstairs into our room, and she'd be very frustrated because she probably told us to stop a lot of times, and we're like, thanks, Mom. And so she came down. This is what I remember. She comes down, and she's like, stop it! Stop it! You're supposed to love your brother! The Bible says you're supposed to love your brother! And then she would, during a season of life, she would add this thing. If you weren't listening, she would yell. No, she wouldn't yell. I remember yelling. I highly doubt that she yelled this, but it makes for a better story that she yelled it, all right? And she would say, rebellion is like witchcraft, all right? Which is in the Bible. It's in the Bible, right? And so And my brother and I, we still talk about this. My dad's like distancing, like, I don't know. Dad, wait till Father's Day, all right? So, so we did rebellions like witchcraft, and Dan and I still talk about it this day where we would like try not laughing. You remember that when your parents are getting angry? And you're like, I'm supposed to act scared so this wraps up quicker. You're like, oh no. And it's like, you know, witchcraft. If this is this witchcraft, how much does it pay? Right? Like I'm interested. If this is the road that this is going, and my mom, I love you so much, Mom. All right? But it got me thinking for this message, why as parents, why as people of influence at times do we just raise our voice and yell at people, right? And maybe not yell, but we get frustrated and we're like, just put your shoes on, kids. We can't get to the park that you want to go to if the shoes are not on. And the kids are like, I am so much smarter than you. And so you just keep getting louder, repeating basic information, right? This is parenting 101, all right? This is middle management 101. Why do we do this? Because there's something inside of us that believes and knows that we're right. As a parent, you're like, okay, I have a fully developed brain. I am an adult, right? This human came from my body, all right? So I think I know them. And you are 7. You learned half the alphabet, all right? I know some things you don't know, right? And so there's something in our head that says you should just listen to me. People will respond to clear instruction and logic. And rational, like, arguments are going to be heard, and then people are going to be like, you know what? I've never thought about it that way. I'm going to put my shoes on right now with a smile on my face, Mom. Thank you. Right? It doesn't work that way. But this is how this kind of carries over into other areas of life where we feel certain or we feel enlightened. And we feel like our enlightenment is just a little bit lighter than your enlightenment. And so when you are on social media, when you're in a conversation with friends, when you're out introducing yourself, you're maybe at like some network event for work, and people are talking, and you're like, oh, I will share this, and everyone's going to say, I've never thought about that before. Wow, Chris, thank you for teaching me the ways of Superman that can really never die, and he just needs sunlight to continue to exist. And if you put him away, he might die, appear to be dead, but he's not really dead. No one's ever thanked me for that information, all right? I've shared it dozens of times. People are like, all right, let's get back to the math class. Like, oh. All right, there's something in us that believes logic and reason will change opinions. And if you've ever been on Facebook, if you've ever been on social media, especially during COVID, you have probably discovered that this is, in fact, a lie. It does not work, but people still keep running into that same wall. Right? And maybe you've been there. There was a season in my life, like I said, I think I mentioned earlier, when I, during deconstruction, if you ever deconstructed your faith, and part of being a progressive Christian community, one of the things is that there's a lot of people who have, like, thought, what's the deal with God and faith, and begin to pivot and take some beliefs that they held, put them back down, pick up other ones. We call that deconstruction. And a lot of people in the beginning of deconstruction are angry, right? Because they're like, How come you taught me these things? How come I said this was holy or this was sacred? In fact, it was just harming. Like, it was just hurting people. It was hurting myself. That's not who God is. And so, like, on social media for a little bit, I would be like, people would say, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? Is that what you really mean? Because this God doesn't do that. All right, and there's no one that was like, wow, thanks, Chris. But I felt very strongly, right? You've been there before? And where I'm at now, or I'm more enlightened than I was then, but it's like, it's not going to work, but I still feel that way. This is really good news, because Jesus speaks to this multiple times. Part of the human condition, part of what we are, like, we really believe is that we want transformation for others. We want transformation for ourselves, but we really want transformation for other people, especially people that we care about. And when you feel passionately about something, when you feel convinced on something, you can't help but share that. And the fastest route is certainty. The fastest route is telling people, here's what's wrong, and here's what's good. Here's what's acceptable, and here's what's not. I love the idea of here's what's disgusting, and here's what's not disgusting. We almost kind of like want extreme reactions to information so that we can do better and be better. And rarely, when I think back in my life, I honestly can't remember a time where an argument, actually there's one, I can remember one time of my friend Anna talking about queer people who love each other. And I was in high school, I'm like, Bible clearly says, right? And she's like, why would God care who loves who? And she was like, she wasn't arguing, she's like, just, she was like, why, if this God is so good, why would he care if my friend Steve is in love with Bob? Like, what? And I'm like, I don't have an answer for that, but I don't like the tone of your voice, Hannah. Right? Right? That was the one time where I'm like, oh, I never thought about what God cares about. Right? It's wonderful. But Jesus speaks to it. And it's in Matthew chapter 13 where Jesus is giving this parable, which is just a story. Right? Jesus is just like riffing stories. And it's a story about a person throwing seeds, and the seeds falling on hard places, it's falling in soft places, and it's growing, and it's not growing. And the disciples, which is like his crew, they're finally like, Jesus, big fan of your robes. It is wonderful. Compliments your skin well. But the stories, can we just like, can you just tell us? You're the Messiah. Please, just tell us. These are the 14 irrefutable facts of leadership. Here's the 14 irrefutable facts of following God. And if we just have the right information, then we could win and we could do some amazing things. This is essentially what they're saying, and this is how Jesus responds. This is chapter 13, verses 11 through 16. Jesus replied, because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have, will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables or in stories. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. So now Jesus is quoting the Hebrew Bible, which, little note, Isaiah, Ecclesiastes, like he mentions and references a lot. Isaiah is a big deal. So he's quoting, he says in Isaiah, you will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this, people's heart have become callous. They hardly hear with their eyes, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with the ears, understand their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But now this is Jesus again. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it. I love this. This verse was read at my graduation from a seminary just several weeks ago. And it stuck with me in thinking about this service, especially thinking about, honestly, about Mother's Day. Because Jesus is responding by telling a story. Disciples are like, just can we be done with the stories and just give us direct information? And Jesus responds by what? Telling another story, all right? Of saying that you guys have access. People would have killed to have this revelation, to have this opportunity to experience and know and process what he calls the kingdom of God, or the kingdom of heaven is what it's called. And what he's saying is there's been a bunch of people who've heard this. There's been a bunch of people who've seen it, and they just still couldn't see it, and they just couldn't hear it. He's saying, and then he quotes Isaiah, which goes like way back, right? And we can talk about what prophecy is and what it's not at a different time. But Isaiah is saying, if you want to hear, open your ears and turn your heart. Because information doesn't really just click with us. Right, some information is like, it's fun to learn like niche things about movies you can use at like dinner parties to like amaze your friends, but then there's the information that you hear. Like I was just talking with someone in recovery, and the idea of like a friend of mine that's been sober for a while like blazed a trail for me, and I kept thinking, why does that seem so holy? Is the word I'd use? Why does it seem so sparkly? And because I wasn't ready to hear until I was ready to hear that maybe there's a better way for me to live my life. And that person told a story by living their life. And I would ask and they would share. And that person is an amazing person. And their story changed me. It wasn't just information. It was I heard and it changed my heart, right? God was using that person, their story, to change my heart. This is how we find transformation. is through telling stories, through listening to stories. And we crave, especially when I was like in my 20s, in my late teenage years, I was on fire for God, and I just wanted information, and I started reading apologetic books. Do you guys know what apologetics is? All right, apologetics is how to be a really annoying person. Right? Apologetics is like how to win articulate faith so that you can win arguments. Right? And I think there's a way of thinking about apologetics that could be like life-giving for everybody, not just one person. So I'm not against it. But it's through telling stories. You know, like when I read the Bible to some people, they're so surprised I read the Bible, right? When I read the Bible and I read the Gospels, I've been reading these stories for a long time. And it's funny, now in my 40s, when I'm reading these parables, I'm reading about the life of Jesus, when I'm reading like through the book of John, it hits me different than when I was in my 20s and when I was in my 30s, right? Because it is a story that billions and billions of people have been reading and finding hope and transformation in wildly different ways. Because where you enter into that story is based on the intersectionality of who you are. Your social identity, your social location is going to inform of how I hear and process information and how I process a story. And thank God. Because some of the things that I'm caring and thinking about now were things I was not even contemplating in my 20s or my 30s. And yet the same story, the same person of Jesus is telling wider and more inclusive stories because I am more inclusive and I'm ready to hear those stories. So when I'm talking, I have a kid who is very interested in religion. Very interested in religion. And I love it. And he wants to talk about the Bible and he wants to talk shop. But he doesn't want to like come to church. I'm like, hey, do you want to come here? He's like, why? I'm like, well, we just spent 2 hours talking about like the book of John. He's like, I just want to learn more about John. Because where they're at, that's what they're hungry for. They want to process in his mind, which was kind of like me, is like, I want to articulate arguments. Because it made me feel a little bit more secure. Made me feel a little bit more like, okay, I think I could like talk about this and not be embarrassed. And I love that. Where you enter into that story is when you're ready to hear that story. And this is why Jesus did it. It's part of the wisdom tradition. It's frustrating because Hunter and I could have very different interpretations of who's throwing the seeds and who hears it and what that means because of where in our lives that we're different people. And I love that. This is why we're never going to be the kind of church that says, tell me what to believe. Tell me what to feel. Like we choose people over doctrine. And that's not for everybody. There's some people who want to be part of a church, and I don't think that's bad, of saying, can you decide or you make decisions of what we think is going to be the best for people or the country or whatever it is, and I'm fine with that. We're just not going to be that kind of church because I would not be allowed in that kind of church because I want to continue to evolve. I hope that in my 50s, I'm reading the same stories and having different takeaways, but it's messy. Right? It's really messy. Now, there's two things I wrote down that I'm like, I'm going to try remembering how to say these, and I couldn't. So here's benefits of the story. Understanding arises in relationship. Relationship between God, humans, the world, all things. We're all in relation to one another. Parables or stories encourage listeners to wrestle with meaning, requiring relational openness rather than passive reception. Those who cannot hear or see are not being punished or rejected. Rather, they have not yet embraced the creative responsibility of active discernment. The seeing and hearing emerge from openness, risk-taking, and relational engagement rather than passive belief. Being part of a story means we don't just check out. And the benefit of having people tell you what is right, what is wrong, what is black, what is white, what is good, what is sacred, what is not, is that we don't have to process it anymore. You just check it off. You're like, oh, the Bible's infallible. There is no mistakes. It is perfectly clear. All you have to do is read it, and then you have all the answers. A lot of people believe that. And so when I say, yeah, but what if it doesn't have all the answers? What if it gives us points to wisdom that we can still hear today through people like Will Ferrell? Seriously, right? What about people like Martin Luther King? What about the Buddha? You know, sometimes in church or in faith, we're afraid to talk about other streams of faith or consciousness because we're like, well, that will rob the majesty of Christ. It points to the majesty of a living, beautiful, wonderful, benevolent God that found inspiration in so many hidden places that we're still discovering today. And thank God we're still discovering, because I'm discovering in myself still to this day. And to me, that is being a part of the story. It's not just passive information, right? It is, you have to be alive and awakened to the reality that is. That's the power of a story. So here's where I leave you. And I told Carly to be exactly 18 minutes long, and I'm exactly at 15 minutes. No, I'm not, right? Where I leave you is this, two things. Is, what stories are you listening to? Not even to, like, what story you're living. What stories are you listening to? Do you have a mentor? Do you have some, like, wise sage that's in your life? And a mentor or wise sage does not mean they have to be 30 years older than you. They could be 10 years younger than you. But depending on what you're looking for, we can look behind this and find mentors of people who are thinking different ways about science of the world or about God or about reality. It can be people who've gone, I have someone in my life who's 18 years older than me that was, especially when my kids were little, where it was a huge mentor to me because he raised four kids, four teenagers. I had all of them when I was their youth pastor. And I'd look at him, I'm like, this missions trip is going to be really expensive for you because you have four kids that want to go. And we'd sit down and we'd grab a drink and we'd connect, and I would just ask him tons of questions of, like, how did you raise boys? It doesn't make any sense. They are not bright, all right? How did you, right? If you raise boys, it's true. It's like, how do you do this? You just got to keep them alive. And, you know, the wisdom that I look back, there was nothing in there that was like he could write a book. He could start a podcast, right? He's a middle-aged white man. He can start a podcast. But it was just being in the space with him, right? Sometimes just being in the story with someone is enough. We don't have to make it so complicated. But where are you finding wisdom? Now, I said it earlier, is that the wisdom that is in this room, there's what, 30 of us here? I mean, 500 of us here, right? The wisdom that's in this room is more than enough because of our age, our experiences, our trauma, our grief, our joy, our milestones. Like, in this room, there is sacred wisdom if we access it. And the only way to access it might be walking up and saying, hi, my name's Chris. I've seen you at church a couple times. I don't know your name. It could be something as simple as that. But if you want to live a better story, you have to be informed and be in the idea of what other stories are available. So number two is this then. If you want, what kind of story are you living? And I was just talking, it's so funny. Well, I was just talking, I wasn't planning on saying this, but I was talking to someone yesterday, and they're like, you know what? I talked to someone who was in their 40s, and they were really just like, is this all life is? Is this it? I'm just working and making meals, and I go to bed and wake up. And what they said to me was like, and you know what my partner told me? Oh, you mean like every other person in their 40s? And they said that to me as they were really frustrated their partner said that. And I flat reflected, because I'm a professional, right? I'm just like, uh-huh. And in my head, I'm like, yep, they were right. Right? Is that, like, I have those feelings. And it's like, oh, because of whatever I thought my story was going to be, was being informed when I was in my 20s, like, I'm going to be this and that. And it's like, oh, I'm so glad I was never this or that. What a horrible life that would be. What a shallow life that could have been. Right? Instead, I love where I'm at, but I still have to deal with that grief. So what kind of story are you living? Is this a story that you've always dreamed to be? And if it's not, were those dreams what you always hoped for? Or maybe it's time to have new dreams. How do you find new dreams? Maybe finding other people's as mentors, sages. But where I end up telling the story about rebellions like witchcraft, right? And trying to get your kids to do, you know how, what thing you could pass along to your kids that's way more significant than truths and how to perform, which is important, I'm not discounting that. The thing that I want to, I'll say for me, the thing I want to pass on to my kids is I want them to know that they have a story that they can live, and that story can infinitely be transformed. I don't want them to think that they're on some sort of like bus schedule, and if they miss the next connecting bus, then their life is running away from them, and then they're just in grief. That this story can always be playing out if, like Jesus says, those who are willing to hear and those who are willing to see, their hearts will turn and they'll be healed. And what is healing? Healing isn't that you were some horrible person, you're some diseased person. Healing is the continual transformation, renewal of what Jesus says is the Spirit within us. It's that reawakening again and again that you've always been loved, that you've always been good. And your story's not too late. You have not ran out of time. So I'm going to pray, and I'm going to invite anyone who feels like that connection of a story, or maybe you feel some grief of your story, or you're excited for the story, or maybe you're a mom or a person of influence of other people, and you're tired of the yelling of the shoes. And maybe you're in a place of like, I'm ready, I would like for a little bit to have that dream. So as I pray, if that's for you, I invite you to join. So God, we love you. And I thank you that the fullness of who God is not isolated to a male experience and not even isolated to a feminine experience, but it transcends the fullness of what it means to be human. And that there's a story for those of us who are parents, for those of us who are loving, inspiring kids that may be not our own. That there is an inclusion of people who have great relationships with their mom and people who've had to distance themselves from their parents. And in all of that, there is a life, abundant, beautiful story that's not being told for someone else. It's easy to feel like other people get the beautiful story and I just get the tolerated one. So for my friends who feel that way, who feel exhausted, who feel tired, who feel like giving up, who just want just to let other people define their story, Holy Spirit, we welcome you. And when you begin to sing that beautiful song that we heard maybe when we were a kid, in our 20s or 50s or 60s, that song that says, keep going. Your heart is being healed. You just can't see it yet. You just can't feel it yet. So, Sacred Mother, will you sing to us and give us energy and life and hope and renewal so we can continue to live a beautiful story and we can invite others into a story as well. Amen. All right. Whew, that was great. Not speaking to, I mean, I was pretty great, but thank you for being in this space. I mean it. It is a mystical thing to come into a room of strangers, talk about the Bible, talk about spirits, sing songs about, or Susie, well, you're either singing songs about lighthouses, right? And how does it all fit together? It's because there's a benevolent God who's wanting to be with us. And through songs like Lighthouses and stories about witchcraft, we can find all of it. On that, enjoy the rest of your weekend, friends.